The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Beards, hashtag give Josh the meats.
Oh, boy.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone rolling on here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly with you. Jason Anderson back later in the week. But the madness certainly hasn't slowed down, which means we get a chance to talk to our friend Myron Metcalf of ESPN, representing the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Kansas City, benefiting them. Myron, as always, I appreciate your time. But right now, about as much as ever, how are you feeling after the greatest 4 days in sports?
Tired. Yeah, exhausted, honestly. Yeah, it's just a lot. I mean, on my end, I produce so much content for ESPN.com that it all becomes sort of a blur, and, you know, radio hits, all kinds of stuff. So, but it was pretty amazing, man. I mean, it felt like we just kept going up. It really had an enjoyable stretch.
What is it like? I mean, I was going to say, put me on the couch next to you. I don't even know that it's a couch. That's a pretty big assumption. What's your war room setup like during the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday stretches?
I got 2 TVs. I got 2 iPads, which is usually sufficient. And they're just kind of running simultaneously. And then, you know, I'm sort of nibbling at these big files I'm doing for ESPN, you know, these big, like, 8,000-9,000-word reseeding pieces and stuff. So, you know, ordering DoorDash is my best friend. You know, they call me a VIP customer because I'm always, like, during the tournament, that's all I do. So, excuse me, it's a whirlwind, man, but I always say it beats working, you know? It beats
Absolutely.
My dad worked in factories for 12-hour shifts when I was a kid, so I got nothing to complain about, man. It was a ride, and I enjoyed it.
What's the peak March Madness meal for you? Like, what's the absolute go-to, the number one seed, if you will?
So, I mean, I try to eat healthier a lot because, you know, you don't want to eat too heavy.
It's tough.
I got
yeah.
to work.
Yeah,
you
you're asleep
mean?
In an
so
hour.
Like, yeah, as a fan, you know, you might do nachos or wings and stuff like that. I can't do that because I got to be up till, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning pumping this stuff out, so... I'm a big Asian food guy, you know, rice, chicken, anything like that. I'm a big burrito guy, you know, so I just try to keep it simple and lighter rather than some of the heavy foods that I certainly will enjoy in Houston when I finally get to the Final Four.
See, when you've only got one game at a time, then you can go with the little denser, higher calorie food. I knew you'd have a good answer. I knew that with all confidence.
Definitely, man. I can write a book about it, honestly.
See that right there.
How to eat your way through the NCAA tournament.
We've had some good ideas before, but this is up there. So go ahead. That's an off-season project, probably. I don't know if you want to start it now, but you know, just go through your DoorDash order history, and then right there you've got your outline. Well, okay, this is good.
100%, man. I'm ready to go.
It's about time that we get you to make some content.
Meals, recipes for people, like.
Oh.
I could get people through it, man. Like, here's the thing, though. If you're going to have, like, an NCAA tournament or Final Four party, like, don't bring weird food. It's just nachos and wings.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I hate it when going to parties and it's like, why are you showing me this thing you saw on Pinterest or whatever? I don't care. Like, give me nachos and wings, man.
And definitely don't bring me your first shot at it. That is unacceptable.
Oh, my gosh. I am not your lab.
No.
Like, I am not. Come on, man. This is not some cooking show. Go with what works.
Yes.
Okay? Like, that's always the message for me.
I want staples. Munch Madness, I feel like, is right there for you.
Yeah.
So, again, I'll just, you
right
know.
Right there. Did you just create that?
I think so.
Did
but now, now I'm worried that it's existed somewhere else. I'm going to look right now. I did it again.
Don't put it out there. All the time, you always put out these ideas, man.
I know.
And someone's going to steal it because Munch Madness is incredible.
Damn. Food Network has done something called March Madness. I don't think it's trademarked. I think we can still make a run at this. I think this can still be a book title. We'll keep working on it. Myron Metcalf's Munch Madness is right there, the alliteration. All right, we can talk about the actual basketball if you're not bored of it already. Because, man, it was great. Yeah. It really, really was. And locally, we've had our ups and downs here. But, I mean, starting off with with our Paladins unseating Virginia. You have Arizona fall short. You have Purdue get the 116 upset, get a second pass at that in basketball history. If I go back to the first rounds and you do look at those upsets in the very beginning of some of those Cinderella stories, which one of those stood out to you the most?
Man, I mean, the drama of Furman,
yeah,
Virginia, just because Kia Clark is like a guy who doesn't make mistakes like that.
And yeah.
I think if you go back and look, I think he thinks he's going to get a backcourt violation. Like, I think he's like thinking, oh, no, it's 8 seconds. I got to throw it. But, like, it's one thing to get the steal. It's another thing to set up the perfect shot and then the three goes in. So the drama of that.
Yeah.
Stands out to me, but I don't know if anyone will remember that just because of what FDU did, you know, yeah, against Purdue. But I think probably the most impressive, because honestly, like, Purdue had its flaws and everybody knew it. I don't think people thought they would lose them, but a lot of people had them losing to Memphis
mm-hmm.
in the second round. Memphis didn't make it. But the way Princeton just shut Arizona down,
yeah,
like, Arizona's one of the fastest teams in America. They kind of steamroll you. They have a double-digit lead, I believe, with like 11 minutes to play. And then Princeton is just like, we're going to run some old 1962 system here. We're going to slow it down. And Arizona was like, how do we play this style? And they lost. So I think the most impressive, in my opinion, in terms of the actual basketball, was what Mitch Henderson did for Princeton.
And look, none of us around here have anything sarcastic or little sidearm jabs to say about Princeton at this point, because I was excited for Mizzou fans around here who have been long suffering. They got their first round win. That is a great thing. But then when it lines up to be Mizzou versus Princeton, you go, hey, you know what? At the very least, what else could you possibly ask for? And then Princeton was just the better team in that game. Like, that 1-2 for them to end up being a 15 seed in the Sweet 16 here, obviously tremendously impressive. How do you sort of square the circle there on Mizzou's season, getting the win over Utah State and then just getting kind of outclassed by a 15 seed Princeton who clearly we all have appropriate respect for now, I think?
They played like a team that thought they were playing Arizona or something, that expected that, or I think they played like a team that thought Princeton was a fluke a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that matters. Like, you know, people will say so many things about the emotions of the game, the history of this moment, that those things don't matter. Coaches will say, oh, no, we're just focused on what's ahead. It's all baloney. Like, Tom Izzo is in the Sweet 16 somehow with a group of dudes who nobody believed it, right?
Right.
And because there's something there to be said about that. KU collapses late in the game against Arkansas because those dudes are looking to the sideline and their head coach isn't there. Like, those things matter. And I think Mizzou was sort of going, we can play Arizona. Like, we can handle those dudes. We can run with those dudes. We've seen SEC teams that are built that way. We got those dudes. Oh, wait, now we got to play Princeton? This is easy. But I actually think Princeton and the way they make you play their style has been the most complicating factor of the entire tournament so far. Missouri's down in the second half. They're trying to make a dent in that deficit, but they can't because Princeton isn't going to surrender the possessions to allow you to do that. So a 10-point lead for Princeton is a 25-point lead for any other team because they're just not going to give you the opportunity. So I thought Missouri kind of came out, I don't want to say arrogance, but sort of it's all right there for us. We're on our way to the Sweet 16. And when it was clear that wasn't the case, they didn't respond well to that adjustment. But kudos to Dennis Gates and what they did. He got his money. I think they're in good hands for a long time. And if it's about culture, Dennis Gates has certainly changed that culture at Mizzou in year one.
It's such a fun call on Princeton having 10-point leads be 25-point leads. I have no idea how much you care about Major League Baseball, but I can't help but think about the Royals that won the World Series almost 10 years ago now, good Lord, where it felt like every game was a six-inning game because their bullpen was just overwhelming at the time. Princeton having that sort of artificial, like, way to shorten your opportunities that way is fascinating. And since we're talking about them, that has to be somewhat translatable from here on out, right? I mean, they're not going to play a bad team because we're in the Sweet 16. They get Creighton, and then the winner of Creighton-Princeton gets Bama or San Diego State. But do they have as legitimate of a shot as anybody there? Or do you think, oh, you know what, maybe the slipper comes off a little bit with Creighton, Bama's too overwhelming? How are you looking at the South now?
I mean, they definitely have a shot. I mean, after what they're able to do, it's hard to say they don't. The challenge now in the Sweet 16 will be the prep that teams have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dennis Gates has 24 to 36 hours to get ready for Princeton.
Yeah.
That's hard, yeah. You know, if they're playing this style that you don't see normally. But now you're giving Greg McDermott 4, 5, 6 days to get ready. Crane's a different kind of team. They got size. They got shooters. They'll be different. But I think where Princeton can continue to shine and how they could advance to the Final Four and keep this miracle going is if they just continue to dictate the tempo. Mm-hmm. It's hard for players to look at a team like Princeton and go, not one of your dudes is good enough to play on my team. Like, not one of your dudes got a scholarship offer from this team, right? Mm-hmm. We have a talent edge, and that should be the difference. But when all of a sudden you start playing a style that doesn't really suit you, that's hard to adjust to because you don't have to do that a lot of times in SEC play or Big East play. Teams play the same way. So I think Princeton certainly has a chance, but now you got to deal with the fact that Greg McDermott has a lot of film on what they did in those first couple games, and Creighton is a really good team right now. I'll be interested to see what happens.
Talking to Myron Medcalf of ESPN here, benefiting the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Kansas City, his new book, Munch Madness, Myron Medcalf's guide through snacking through the basketball coming
through the tournament.
A bookstore near you, I don't know, in several years perhaps. You mentioned KU, you know, looking over to the sideline, not seeing Bill Self over there. Obviously, there are it's difficult to have the discussion, at least I had difficulty with it yesterday, of trying to figure out how to give the credit to Norm Roberts for trying to be the steadying hand through a really tough time through the Big 12 tournament and now here, while also acknowledging that like there's a reason that Bill Self is widely agreed upon as one of the best minds in college basketball. I see KU fall short in that game with an opportunity for either execution on their own, and we're talking free throws and 10-second violations and little stuff like that, and then also what's different with Bill Self on the sideline. I would understand this being an unsatisfying end for KU fans, but I don't think it can be too terribly deflating given the circumstances. How did you see that game unfolding, and how are you kind of pulling together the Bill Self void that was left there?
Norm Roberts had an impossible task.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
It wasn't possible. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, like just make it what it is. It was impossible. You can tell me. I do a bunch of TV for ESPN. I'm on the radio all the time. Sports, and I've done everything. If you call me tonight and say, hey, man, SVP's on vacation for a week, you're in. Now, listen, bro, I could do it. I could. Like, I'm decent on TV. I could do it. But by about day 2.5, you're going to start to see that there's some stuff I just don't know. And the whole production crew is going to be looking at me like, yeah, you're not the normal dude.
Yeah.
And that's who I saw late in the KU game.
Mm.
Kudos to Damon Wilson. He was trying to be Bill Self late.
Mm.
Like, he was trying to rally and say, "This is, we got this. Let's do what coach would have us do." But guess what? Norm Roberts was looking for Bill Self, too.
Mm.
It was an adjustment for everybody. And I think that, to me, is a mistake that people are making in assessing the game. It was an adjustment for every player, every staffer. It was an adjustment for Norm Roberts. Yes, he coached those first 4 games. That is not this.
Yeah.
That is not the NCAA tournament, man. That is a whole different situation and scenario. Against a hungry Arkansas team that finally found itself, 3 NBA prospects, 2 projected lottery picks, they got dudes. They ain't never been the problem with Arkansas. And then you saw in the final minutes when it's like you got to have some poise. You got to run the right plays. Everybody's got to do what Kansas has done better than most teams historically. And that is calm down. And they weren't calm.
Mm.
How many times do you see KU look like that in the final minutes of a game? They win those games.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Kansas has been able to do. So I think if I'm a KU fan, I don't know how anyone could see that but an impossible task for Norm Roberts given the circumstances. Those kids played their hearts out. They did their best. But when they looked to the sideline and didn't see one of the greatest coaches of all time, how could anybody expect more than what they did in the first couple rounds of the tournament?
Yeah.
I think that's great. I'll let that be the last word on KU, because we haven't also talked about K-State yet, which yesterday I was better about. I made sure we led with the winners, but sometimes, you know, sometimes the losses demand a little bit of attention. But hey, you want to talk about being in the right hands. I have run the gamut on Jerome Tang, and not negatively, but just like the growth of me buying in, perhaps, to what he's been selling since he got here. And I know this was the case before he arrived in Manhattan. But seeing how this team has truly been able to take on that personality, and then also to get a second half from Marquise Noel in that game against Kentucky that just felt like a perfect encapsulation of a dude taking over in March Madness. I loved it. It felt quintessentially March, and now K-State is the highest-seeded team remaining in their region. What did you see in the Wildcat battle there?
Yeah, Jerome Tang, who I know, you know, and I've been in a lot of different situations with Jerome Tang. You know, obviously, man of faith, kind of mild-mannered when you hear him in these interviews. Mm-hmm. Just a really good dude, you know, who believes that, you know, basketball is a part of life. It's not all of life.
Mm-hmm.
That said, Jerome Tang and those dudes with him will fight you in an alley.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you challenge them to a brawl, Jerome Tang and Kansas State aren't going to be like, guys, we don't want to do that. It's not a good idea. Those dudes will be like, what time are you going to be there?
They'll pray for you afterwards, but they're going to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll be there 5 minutes early, and you'll get there and be like, wait, why are these dudes already here for the fight? Like, we told them 5 o'clock, it's 4:55, and they're ready. What he said after that game against Kentucky, that we had more dudes than they did, that was a head coach being like, listen, I don't care if you're Kentucky. I don't care if you are the 2001 Lakers. Doesn't matter who you are. We're going to show up to fight. Yeah. And when your team can embody that, that just changes everything. I got a buddy who's a big-time Kentucky fan. And as we're watching the game, I texted him. I said, I told you Marquise Noel was a word I can't say on the radio, right?
Uh-huh.
Because he is.
Yeah.
Because he is. Like, that's the kind of dude where it's like, you're going to tell that dude who has had to overcome adversity his entire career, not being big enough,
mm-hmm.
being doubted, going from school to school, nobody thinking that he could be the leader of a team that makes it to the second weekend of the tournament. Mm-hmm. You think that dude's about to back down? You think Keontae Johnson, who collapsed on national TV, mm-hmm. who wasn't going to get his career back, who almost lost his life, and now he gets this opportunity of a lifetime, you think that dude ain't showing up to the fight? You know, so I think that, to me, is what the difference was. Kentucky was sort of waiting for somebody to do it. Marquise Noel, Keontae Johnson, Jerome Tang, and those dudes are like, no, we're not going to just wait for something to happen. We're going to make something happen. And I think that's why Kansas State has such a good chance to make a Final Four run. Like, these dudes have embodied a mindset that Jerome Tang preaches, and you're seeing it play out with how tough they are in those moments.
I know that not every college basketball coach right now is just like turned up to 11, mother bleeping everybody. You know, not everyone's throwing chairs anymore. Right? So like, I understand that, Jerome Tang isn't the only cool headed head coach in the sport anymore. But can you put into context like what makes it work? Because I think for me, what I had to get over at some point was a lot of times you hear guys talk that way and it can be a little corny and then they don't have the juice to follow through with it. But like you just laid out, this K-State team is ready for anybody at any point. And that was a realization that I did not make until further into Big 12 play than it probably should have taken me.
Yeah, you should worry about the quiet ones, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's just a life lesson. That's just a life lesson, man. You're like, I remember Jerome Tang took this job. Guy has a national championship. Baylor's associate head coach. Has a ring, has nothing else to prove, could wait on other jobs. That dude said, I'm going to Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah.
People say, you know what? I don't know if you can win there. Now, Bruce Weber and the challenges that he's had, sort of this up-and-down history. Can you recruit there? Big Brother is there in Lawrence. What are you going to do in Manhattan? And Jerome Tang was like, I got it.
Yeah.
Like, I know I can get dudes. I know I can coach them up. And he didn't beat his chest about it. I mean, when they beat Kansas – to end the seven-game streak, he gets up on the table and is like, hey, man, you guys have fun. But you're not going to storm the court after this because this is just going to be what we do. And there were people who were like, well, come on, man, let everybody have their fun. And what Jerome Tang was saying was, dude, winning is what I'm used to.
Mm.
And I'm trying to make you used to it as well. And what you saw against Kentucky down the stretch was a K-State team for the first time in a long time that got used to winning. And got used to things working out in their favor in those moments rather than going against them. That's a culture thing. Now, I think culture is a cliche that coaches use way too much. And sometimes it sounds like an after-school special or a Disney movie. Yeah. But that right there is culture. You're in a close game. You have a crowd against you. And you got to make plays to go home and advance to the next day and the next weekend. That's culture. That's mindset. And I think that's what Jerome Tang has established. You don't have to beat your chest all the time. But if your dudes know that they're better than the dudes across from you, then you've done your job.
I love it. Last thing for you, Myron. If I make you re-handicap the Final Four here now from 16 on in, who do you like as the favorites out of each region?
Well, I did that when I reseeded the top 16, you know, on ESPN, and it took me forever. I think it's still Alabama. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that if we get Alabama, Houston again at some point, you know, it'll be the same result that we got when they played in the non-conference season. UCLA looks really good. The Jalen Clark injury, I'm worried about that going forward. But if you want to tell me outside of that group, it won't shock me if UConn wins at all. Like, I think they have all the pieces. They're playing great basketball right now, and they're going to be hard to stop.
It's funny on the reseeding where it's like, hey, you can get down to 8 at K-State and not take that as an insult because this is just it's just great basketball from here on out.
It is. 100%, man. It's going to be fun to watch, man.
I can't wait. I look forward to chatting with you again next week. I think it'll be Jason. It's hard to tell when that guy's going to be around, but whoever it is that ends up having the pleasure next week, Myron, appreciate your time as always. Good luck just trying to keep, you know, your body the temple that it is right now through the Sweet 16 and beyond, and we'll chat again next week.
Sounds good.
Myron Metcalf of ESPN here in the zone, benefiting the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Kansas City, and such good stuff on where KU fell short for totally understandable, impossible reasons, and how K-State and Jerome Tang have accomplished everything they've accomplished so far. It's such a beautiful time of the year, especially, thankfully, we got one of these local teams to make it to the Sweet 16, because I really do think we could make a lot of good stuff out of this K-State squad and how this team's been built under Jerome Tang, and that they'll be 5 minutes early for an alley fight, even if they're going to go ahead and you know say a quick prayer for you after the fact. I'm really excited about what these Wildcats could do, and I'm excited to be here with you in the zone. Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly, Jason Anderson, back later in the week. But in the meantime, it's us hanging out here on a Tuesday in the zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
You know, no, I'm not Travis Kelce. God, I wish I was, though.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Mr. Munch Madness himself, Myron Metcalf, for joining us, as he does every week during the college basketball season. It's always fun to catch up with Myron, especially when we have great branding ideas, which we've now done, I think, like two out of the three times he and I have chatted. Got to build an empire out of this somewhere. One empire that is falling one piece at a time right now is our beautiful, our beloved Bracket of Sound. We're just kind of chipping away right now. Is obviously the games over the weekend and Thursday, Friday. Brought down a lot of teams, and we eliminated some on Friday. We eliminated some yesterday to let you know the way we do things here, if you're new, is that we take the entire 68-team field. We take the brackets. We take some of our best audio clips of the year, and we, the selection committee, I don't know who, I mean, we, it's the, no, I'm not involved. The selection committee, me and Jason, assigns them seeds. They get teams. They end up in our four regions, and we have already gone through and gotten our final four out of the Jabroni region, which is in the top left of your bracket. And yesterday, we got through the It Needed to Be Said region, bottom left of your bracket, and eliminated all the sound. That has since fallen. Now we go to the Kiki Leaks region, where Houston, Miami, Xavier, and Texas have all advanced, meaning our 1, 2, 3, and 5 sounds of that region are all still alive, all still kicking and moving on. But there are a lot more that have fallen in the meantime. And we go through now to say goodbye to some of our favorite sounds out of the Kiki Leaks region, also known as the Midwest, beginning with the loss of our number 9 seed. Auburn falls to Houston. Auburn is eliminated, and Auburn was represented by
Kansas City, 3rd and 3, down by 6. Receiver in motion, shotgun snap. Here's a pass, back pedaling, catch at the 5, caught by Tony. He'll breeze into the end zone. Touchdown! The Chiefs have just taken the lead.
Yeah. It's called corn dog.
So it's called what?
Corn dog. It's not called corn dog.
Oh, yes.
Is it called corn dog?
There's nothing better than a good corn dog with some mustard and ketchup.
But he doesn't step into the huddle and say corn dog.
Oh, no, he says corn dog.
He does?
Yeah.
What else does he say?
Don't do a left, dirty egg shuttle, 35 whack corn dog.
That play call is so unintelligible until corn dog. Wait a second, I know that word. A good run for the corn dog audio, but it is eliminated, as is our 12 seed. Drake, representing Drake, falls, so we say goodbye to Drake.
Text message, are you guys out of things to talk about?
No, I've got a full show worth of things, but this is way more enjoyable.
Not out of breaks to take, that's for sure.
Oh, man, I don't even know. I guess we'll just do the Drake.
You know why we don't do the chestnuts on Christmas anymore?
Why don't we do the chestnuts on Christmas anymore, Drake?
All the trees died. There were 4 billion chestnut trees on the east coast of the U.S., and between 1904 and 1940, they all died. Big blight.
What happened?
A blight. My dog brought a dead one to the back porch one time, so I picked it up to put it in the trash can, and that's when I realized it was not dead.
That's what I thought!
So I had a little functional but toy tape measure that you could put in your pocket, and a little notebook and a pencil.
I love this.
And when my mom would go shopping, I would go down the toy aisle, and I'd be like, okay, here's the TIE Fighter, and I would measure the box. And I would write down the dimensions. I did this starting at like age 5.
Drake.
And then when they weren't looking, I would measure the presents, and I'd be like, okay, there's the TIE Fighter.
Some of the best of Drake in the 2022-23 zone season, but it is eliminated. As is our number 4 seed, a truly great one, in honor of someone we lost this year. Our 4 seed was representing Indiana. It means it's time for a Mike Leach story.
I'm genuinely fearful that on our team, if me and the other coaches don't get them right, that about a generation from now, their kids and their grandkids won't have hands, you know, because... from a lack of use, those hands just disappear. I mean, and maybe it'll be like this, like those dinosaur hands like this are, you see. And you know, you got like a Tyrannosaurus Rex who's clearly good at eating things, big old jaws and all that stuff, fairly athletic, can run. Well, his hands are like this. And I think we took a very, very, very big step as a team, which we have to correct this. We have to correct this because, I think that in the end that it's going to be best for all these guys that they have good hand development and that they don't evolve to where they don't have hands. Okay, but we definitely didn't use ours, and so there certainly wasn't any genetic reinforcement on our part that we should maintain our hands. I mean, and I don't want all of a sudden, you know, guys driving across this country and then they get to Starkville, Mississippi, and all of a sudden there's these athletic looking friendly guys, because we have great guys that don't have any hands. And I hope that that's not the case, but that's where we're headed right now. And we're going to try to get that fixed in this off week.
These big, athletic-looking guys. Great guys. We got great guys. Just no hands. That sound is eliminated, as is the 13 seed from the region representing Kent State. They were bounced by Indiana in the first round, which means we said goodbye to our 13 seed.
Was that did nights and weekends that would run the board for those games. I hear...
Hey Jason, I don't know if you can hear me right now, but your connection is really starting to get really bad.
Ooh, well, we hear you.
I can hear you.
Well, sound like the Terminator.
Is that your least favorite in the tournament, Beard? Just on like a subconscious level,
probably.
Because that means something's
very
going
funny later.
Yeah. Yes, it is very funny now. But in real time, especially when you're back on this side, when there's nothing you can do about it, very helpless feeling. But it was our 13, and it's been bounced from the tournament, as has our number 6 seed, Iowa State. Iowa State did not put up nearly as good of a fight as this sound did.
Austin Ryder's, my center's yelling, "Get off me! Get off me! Get off me!" I'm like, "Can't move. I can't move. What do you want me to do? My kneecap is in the back of my leg. So what am I supposed to do?"
I love that sound. In retrospect, I'm going to talk about something you didn't enjoy in real time that in retrospect is very funny and fun. That clip and that story are up there. What am I supposed to do? We also say goodbye to our 11 seed representing Pittsburgh. A different Pittsburgh, usually associated with the voice of this story, Kendall Gammon. But our 11 seed representing Pitt is out.
"What do you do?" And he goes, I'm in a band. He goes, "Oh, really? What type of music?" And he goes, "Well, I play rock." He goes, "Not really my thing, but very nice." And so he said, "Again, my name's Lennon. What's your name?" He goes, "John Bon Jovi."
That's Kendall Gammon telling a great Lynn Dawson story shortly after he passed. A story of Lynn Dawson having a conversation with a guy named, let me check those notes again, John Bon Jovi. Is it John Bon or Bon Jovi? How many words is that? Great Lynn Dawson story there from Kendall. Meanwhile, we lost our 14 seed, Kennesaw State, represented by another run that was just far too short.
Danny Shelton.
He has this kind of energy, you know. You don't want to f*** it up.
Introductory press conference at training camp. Just here again, Beards, will you just play that one again? There's two clips together there, but Jason is throwing it live to St. Joe to hear Danny Shelton's first words as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Danny Shelton.
He has this kind of energy, you know. You don't want to f*** it up.
Never got enough Danny Shelton in our lives last season. Maybe bring him home. That's where I'm at the moment. And we also, are we at the end of our, we've got one remaining? We sure are. Okay, so our last one here to eliminate from the Kiki Leaks region is our 10 seed, Penn State, represented by...
"Your ass is prepared for this for 365 days. I think about the in that locker room. Think about getting our opportunity. All the you went through this week to get ready for this game, now is when you pay the price. You go out there with energy, enthusiasm. Hey, guys, ain't nobody in this room should be cautious. Ain't nobody in this room should be nervous about shit. Go out here and their ass up. Don't think about scoreboard. Oh, yeah. Don't think about shit. You think about knocking the out of them. Did you hear what Box said on Monday? When I sat that meeting, I wanted to go and play right then. Do your shit up out here. 2 years ago, Ron Joy, tell me you these guys up. You're going to play the right way. You play the right way. You knock their ass off. You stay off the ground. You tackle the down the ball. It's easy. Play the right. Punish their ass on offense and kick their ass on special teams, guys. It's about who we are. I believe in you. Let's go.
That's Kirby Smart being... Kirby not safe for work. And then Georgia went out and they did bleep their bleeps right up. That is a thing that happened. Nobody believed in us. Georgia football. There you have it, our Kiki Leaks region, which means we are down to one region we will go through tomorrow with Mick Schaefer because it is his namesake. The McNipples region does still roll on, although it does it without a number one seed, obviously, Arkansas ousting Kansas. So we'll go through the eliminations in that region with Mick tomorrow. And then on Thursday, maybe we give you the Sweet 16 matchup preview because there's some good audio that has made it. So I want you to know who you should be rooting for going into the week. But I have good news. Here's a little teaser for you. If you're rooting for audio about Mick Schaefer's nipples, it's going to be a win-win. And Beards, I don't know if you want to mark that for next year or not, but You can't lose with mixed nipples. I think we've proven that time and time again.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Cleveland State has a coach named Dickie Nutt. And I'll now move on to another topic.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Let's do a quick check-in over at the 810 WHB Bracket Challenge. You know, you hopefully signed up to compete with all of us. And we have our quote-unquote VIP leaderboard. It's not that exclusive a club. It's just, you know, people here at 810 who did it. And let me check the standings. First place, Joshua Briscoe. That's weird. Huh. All right, moving on. No, I wanted to give two updates here from the Bracket Challenge. First of all, yes, I am winning. I have one more point than Seren does, and Jason is currently tied, but losing the tiebreaker, whatever the metric is, to Chief Bracketologist Chloe Briscoe, who I may have mentioned this on the show. I can't remember. I talk too much to ever remember when I say things. I just talk too much, period. We've been over that. But there is a world in where I don't, if I win this, it'll be hilarious because clearly I know ball. But ideally, Chloe will win the bracket challenge, and she has a path to it. She had KU winning the whole thing, which obviously is going to be tough. She's 13, by the way, and does not particularly care about basketball. She's way more passionate about animals and specifically like marine wildlife and everything. So her final four, my family lives in Florida now. Her final four was KU versus Miami. Miami's still kicking. On the other side of her final four, Creighton, still kicking, gets Princeton next. And Florida Atlantic, who gets Tennessee. That is an Owls Blue Jays head-to-head. I believe that's how that happened. She had out of the East Florida Atlantic versus Kansas State. And Kansas State versus Michigan State. Everyone is like, oh man, the eastern region of my bracket's totally bleeped. Not in this house. She did have Oral Roberts getting to the Elite Eight. Obviously, they got bounced in the first round. You know, sometimes you miss one. But that is that's all available for you there at 810WHB.com. You can see everyone else's brackets and see kind of what our hopes and dreams are of where our teams may end up ultimately. But I'm really most invested in Chloe's bracket and just generally, you know, really getting a perfect hold on what March Madness is, and that is hoping for the 13-year-old who does not particularly watch basketball. Hoping that they win the entire thing. That is my hope. My hope is also that you have been enjoying March Madness here on your home for it, Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's brought to you by Xfinity, Blue Chew, CBD American Shaman, First Federal Bank, JPA Roofing, and Barstool Sportsbook Inside Hollywood Casino. Thanks to all of them for being here for March Madness. Again, I think I may have mentioned at some point on the show that we have the years-long tradition of Chloe being almost entirely sports' chief bracketologist and her picking the brackets every year, occasionally beating Beards, occasionally beating a lot of people at 810. I think that one of the dog years really worked out well for her, and that's tremendous. But also, over in the old AES podcast feed, I also asked her for a brief scouting report on Jawan Taylor, the Chiefs' newest offensive tackle. And Beards, I don't know if my question is in here or if it begins with the voice of our head analyst.
It starts with the voice of the head analyst.
Okay, so I had seen the video on Twitter of Jawan Taylor reeling in an enormous fish, and then also a picture with him posing next to it with it up by the boat. If you haven't seen it, you should go look. It's tremendous. But I also realized that this is the perfect time to, I say chief bracketologist kind of tongue-in-cheek. I don't want to you know, do away with the illusion of that. But Chloe genuinely knows more about marine life than anyone else that I know by a significant margin. So I asked Chloe, what does it mean for Jawan Taylor's football skills that he was able to reel in this massive fish?
So what he caught was a Goliath grouper, which is probably about 400 pounds. So when you put that into perspective, him hauling in a 400-pound fish is pretty good talent, if you ask me. And he could use that on the football field. That strength can go a long ways.
I mean, eat your heart out, every other NFL analyst. She even had the cadence down. She's natural. And also, great analysis. Clearly a strong fella. The video of that is bonkers. Have you seen the video of that yet, Beards?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Very large fish.
It was, she said Goliath grouper, which I was informed by her. I asked, you know, what it was. And,
grouper, very tasty.
Is a Goliath grouper tasty?
I've never had a Goliath grouper. I've just had a normal grouper.
I wonder if a Goliath grouper is extra tasty or, you know, not so much because it's probably significantly older, I guess. I think they're protected, she was saying also, and so that's why you couldn't, like, try to reel it in, which, by the way, if you did try to get it in your boat anyway, that thing is basically a small whale. Yeah. I don't know what you would do with that. But anyway, that sort of analysis you can only get from Chloe, whose bracket is panning out pretty nicely at 18WHB.com. Also, again, thanks to Twin Peaks, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, and Olathe Kia, Smoke and Fire, and Hy-Vee for being a part of our bracket challenge there. As I cling to the top, and Chloe right now, again, just being tied with Jason if she could beat Jason, that would be, I think, about all we could ask for. It looks like there's an accuracy percentage tiebreaker. The bracket usage that we have on the 810 site's got some extra analytics where Chloe's bracket here is listed at a 44% risk percentage. I'm guessing that means almost half of her picks are probably upsets. Like Jason's is 25%. Mine's 20%. I must have been pretty chalky. But, you know, that doesn't even put me near the top of the list. Seren at 17, Nate at 15, Curtis at 11. So we'll see how that pans out. Plus, we'll also talk about basketball and maybe a little bit of fishing with Todd Lebo coming up next segment as well. I also realized that for like the 15th consecutive time, I have missed my window to talk about Drew Tranquil. We touched on it a tiny bit with Adam Teicher earlier in the show. And as always, all the show's hours are up on the Zone podcast page. You can get that at 810WHB.com, the 810 mobile app, or just search for The Zone wherever you get your podcasts and your podcatcher of choice, and you can grab them there. But I am very, very intrigued to see as this all unfolds. And here's famous last words. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. And we'll talk about it with Lebo some as well. But seeing where the Chiefs do actually find the best spot for Tranquil to land, I think is going to be fascinating. This is something that our friend Seth Kaiser was covering up in his Chief in the North newsletter, going through and looking at Tranquil's strengths as a coverage linebacker and as a guy who's really good off the blitz. There is a specific role that makes the most sense for him. He is one of your nickel linebackers, and he would be your dime linebacker. Nickel's five defensive backs, and dime is six. Don't get too worried about the coin stuff. I don't know who decided that, but we don't have a six cent to coin, so it moves up to a dime. But if you have this belief, as the Chiefs I seem to, where you say, hey, Nick Bolton is a three-down linebacker, period, this move makes less sense to me because you're now talking about trying to fit Tranquil in your base package when Willie Gay is probably a better weak side base linebacker than Tranquil would be because he's at least a little bit bigger and hits a little harder, a little better against the run. But Tranquil is a tremendous athlete who is a matchup advantage in that spot in coverage. I mentioned earlier, even, is there a chance the Chiefs play a little more base this year with all three linebackers on the field if Tranquil's one of those guys that eliminates him from having to be, you know, the safety hybrid that typically is in that spot? Think of prime Dan Sorensen, where you're trying to have the flexibility of a coverage-first, quote-unquote, linebacker who can play up in the box but could drop back a little off that. Tranquil fits that role really nicely. But does that mean the Chiefs believe that he's an upgrade over Willie Gay in that role? Or, I would love to see this, do the Chiefs have an all-athlete mode, coverage-first mode, where Willie Gay and Drew Tranquil could be out on the field together in some dime packages, and nickel packages, and Tranquil's your guy in dime? I think it makes a lot of sense, but I also think that demands a little bit of a disregard for what the Chiefs have shown to believe in Nick Bolton. It'll be interesting. I like Tranquil a lot. Those four guys with Chanel, Gay, Bolton, and Tranquil, that's a good quartet. I'm just not sure how the Chiefs are going to use them just yet. Todd Lebo next.